Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back, guys. I'm back with Claudine, and today we're talking about some of the crazy things you can find inside of Notre Dame. You know, we've been talking a lot about Notre Dame with all the history and the reopening coming up next year, this year, actually. So now we're going to talk about some of the things you can find inside, and I'll let Claudine take it from here.
Yeah, so this is exactly, it's 5 years ago today that they had the fire. So on April 15th, 2019, was the day of the fire. And it was a moment that I think very few people can ever forget when we learned about that. And in some ways, it feels like it is so long ago because it's pre-COVID. But in some ways, it feels like it just happened yesterday. So it's very exciting. We have been doing a monthly episode because there's so many amazing stories, and we're going to get you all ready for the reopening on December 8th. So it's just 7 months away. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it at all. Like, that feels crazy since we've been waiting so long already.
Yeah. And we are actually recording this on Easter, but today I went down there and they rang the Emmanuel bell, which a couple months ago we did the episodes all about the bells. And Emmanuel, if you remember, is the biggest one and it's the oldest one going to the 17th century. So last year they rang Emmanuel and Marie, but this year they just did Emmanuel. And so I went down there and I made a video of it. So you could go back and look on my Instagram and my Facebook, and I'll see if I could post the link on my website. So I recorded the whole 5 minutes of the bell ringing, and the whole time all I could think about is next Easter, we could be back inside. And I remember going, I think the first time I was here on Easter, I was in Notre Dame.
Wow. I can't believe it's taken so long, but like you said, next year.
The amount of work that they're doing, it's like lightning speed.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
It's really incredible. And I have other plans for other episodes about like the architects, including the love of my life, Philippe Villeneuve, the head architect in Notre Dame. But we will go all through that. But this one, I wanted to share some of the really cool things that maybe hopefully two of them are back in there. But one of them, hopefully you'll be able to see it, if not in the cathedral, in the museum they plan to open. But the night of the fire, the statues, paintings, and all the important relics were saved, as well as another treasure that few people even knew existed. I didn't even know that this was a thing or was even in the cathedral until afterwards. But rolled up and pushed away in a very large box under some benches was a carpet so grand that it lay in the choir to baptize a prince. It was over 80 feet long and rolled away. It was drowned in tons and tons of water. When Hervé Lemoine, director of the Mobilier National, had a chance to see this carpet, he was worried it was damaged beyond repair. So it was unrolled, dried, frozen, and deprived of oxygen to kill any insects that might have been in there. But once they unrolled it, they were very pleased to see that the carpet was in such great shape, except for a few dark spots. It's named the Drap d'Or, the cloth of gold, and the carpet dates back to 1825 when King Charles X had a commission to be placed in the church when he was in attendance for mass. So it was created from the drawing of Jacques-Louis de la Saintonge. The carpet went through a few changes before it was ever finished. The manufacturer Royal de Savonnier was tasked with the job of weaving this immense carpet. On September 15th, 1825, at a former soap factory near the Trocadero that was large enough to hold the loom, the weaving began. Saintonge's design included a large white cross with the French coat of arms in the center and the monogram of Charles X, the fleur-de-lis and a necklace of the Order of Saint-Michel and the Holy Spirit encircle the coat of arms. Golden vines with grapes and colorful leaves wind around the cornucopias and a neoclassical reliquary on the lower portion. Around a large candlestick are a mitre and other attributes of the church that are also around the symbols of the four evangelists. So at the top, you have the eagle of Saint Jean, the angel of Saint Matthew, the lion of Saint Mark, and the ox of Saint Luke. And I was lucky enough to get to see this carpet a few years ago. I've seen it twice now. And it was just completely jaw-dropping. It was amazing. I can't imagine it being in the church because too many people would just walk on it and destroy it. But the three glorious days that marked the revolution that ousted Charles X, that was also captured by my man Delacroix, put a halt to the project and the design of the carpet. Under Louis-Philippe, the Bourbon symbols were removed and the fleur-de-lis and the necklace, as well as any markings of the former king. It was finally completed in 1833 and was placed in the Galerie des Palais of the Louvre for everybody to see. On May 2nd, 1841, it was used for the first event of Notre Dame, the baptism of the grandson of Louis-Philippe, Philippe d'Orléans. So under Napoleon III, it was used for the baptism of his son. This is the prince, Prince Louis Napoleon, on June 14th, 1856. Following the end of the Second Empire, the carpet was used once more for a visit of Tsar Nicholas II until it was rolled away for over 80 years. We did not see it again until a papal visit of John Paul II was a great reason to bring the colorful carpet out once more on May 30th, 1980. But it was mostly forgotten and rolled away. It would return in 2017 for a 10-day exhibit open to the public just after Christmas on January 4th. But following the fire and the months of treatment to rid of the insects, it was a real treat to see it in person at the 2019 Journée du Patrimoine at the Mobilier National. The colors are stunning and vibrant, and all of the emotion and tears came to the surface as soon as I saw it. And they had it like in this big room, and then there was this, you walked up like 10 steps and stood on a riser so you could look down and see it. Because if you're on ground level, you know, it's hard to see because it is so long. But it was in amazing shape. And this was before they even started the restoration.
That's so wild that you got to see that.
Yeah, it was amazing. So on July 7th, 2022, the restoration of the carpet began by a highly skilled group of masters trained in historic repair in a large room with looms with massive windows that they actually call the fish tank. The natural light streams in and they work for endless hours on every detail, the treasured carpet. When I went there to the Mobilier National during the Patrimoine days, which, you know, I beg everybody to come here to come and see if you are interested in French history. It was so amazing because this is a place they still restore carpets and tapestries and, you know, chandeliers and furniture, everything that they use for, like, you know, the presidential buildings and houses and historic places. And they have one room that's just nothing but yarn. And it's like every color of yarn you've ever seen, but yarn going back like 400 years.
Whoa, that's wild.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you watch these men and women that are restoring these things and, you know, taking the time to, you know, pull in each individual little tiny thread. It was just it's still just the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. But the carpet itself weighs over 1,000 pounds and a dozen men need to lift it and shift it just to get just for a few inches. So as they're working on it, then, you know, after they get through an inch of it, then all of these men have to come just so that they could pick it up and shift it a little bit more.
That's so cool.
It's really cool. The only part of it that was really in a bad shape was at the very bottom of it. The canvas at the bottom was glued with fish skin adhesive in the 19th century, and it hardened it, making it almost impossible to get a needle through. So they had to replace the edging and the dark spots, and hopefully it'll return to the Notre Dame or the museum that on the anniversary a few months ago, they did the anniversary of what it was like exactly a year until its reopening. President Macron was there and they did a ceremony and he announced that day that they would be doing a museum, which is something they actually talked about long before the fire. And that they're going to do it in the Hotel Dieu, which is right next to Notre Dame across from the Parve. But so hopefully because they've talked about that long before the fire, maybe it won't take forever to get it open. But most likely that's where the carpet will go. It probably won't go back into the cathedral because they don't want people walking all over it.
Yeah, I imagine after all that, they don't want people touching it.
Yeah. And you know that they actually had, they made a bunch of carpets that were going to, there was going to be 90 carpets down the Grand Gallery of the Louvre. And they started making, they only made about six of them before Louis XIV decided to leave and go to Versailles. And so they were never finished, but you could see some of those carpets in the Louvre now on in the Sully Wing on the first floor. But I can't even imagine if the Louvre had carpets like that, they would just after 30,000 people a day. And the Grand Gallery, you know, right off where Mona Lisa is, where every one of those 30,000 people a day walk, that thing would be just like threadbare.
Yeah, that would be insane.
It would not be good. But another amazing thing is, and, you know, we still can't really see this because it's on the very front of it and we cannot get close enough to the doors. But the doors of Notre Dame are pretty amazing. I mean, besides, and I'll do another one just about the sculptures and what the doors mean. But there's an old saying about the devil is in the details. And I think maybe this is why, this is where it comes from. But there's a legend that was that comes with the doors of Notre Dame. In the 13th century, a young locksmith named Biscornet, we don't know his first name, said he had a faster and less expensive way of forging iron. So with his very lofty promises, he was given the task to create the hinges and the decoration, and locks are the great doors of the front of Notre Dame. So all three of those doors. Overwhelmed by this promise and toiling away for months, he finally asked for help. When his helper arrived a few days later, they found Biscornet asleep in his workshop in front of the doors. The three sets of doors were finished. And as you can see today, and I'll put a picture up, they are absolutely amazing. So the legend is that he sold his soul to the devil to complete this monumental task and died shortly thereafter. So with the doors in place at the inauguration of the church, nobody could open them until a priest sprinkled the locks with holy water and it released and opened up.
What?
Yeah.
That's a lot. So
that's a lot, but you can see some of those original pieces in the Musée National de Moyen Âge, which is what most people call the Cluny Museum. You can find pieces of the original 13th century ironwork by Biscornet. Most of the ironwork seen on the doors today is back to the 19th century reconstruction by Viollet-le-Duc. So what's on the church today, it's the same design, still looks the same, but it's not the exact same iron. But you can see those in the Cluny. And we're going to do another episode about some of the other amazing things and the statues you could find in there. But the last thing, one another really amazing thing, and it's a very lasting image that the day after the fire, when they put the first pictures out from the door of Notre Dame looking in, you just saw, you know, right there in the transept in the middle, just the piles of charred wood. But in the back, you saw the Golden Cross and the three statues. So the Pietà and the two statues on either side. And that's what I'm going to tell you about. So at the high altar, it's closed off for visitors. But this is where Nicolas Cousteau's Descent from the Cross is, the Pietà. It's a popular subject in art going back quite a long time. And it's something you could see in the Louvre and many churches. But yes, of course, the one in Notre Dame de Paris is also linked to two kings. So on February 10th, 1638, Louis XIII's wife, Anne of Austria, was finally with child after 23 years of marriage. She had had 2 to 4 miscarriages. We're not really positive. And he decided, he vowed to Virgin Mary that his king, he would give his kingdom to the Virgin for his unborn child. So he wanted a lavish statue created for the high altar of Notre Dame. However, these things take time. And Louis XIII died in 1643 and would never see it even started. His son, Louis XIV, took on the project in 1699, 61 years after the vow was constructed and the statue finally began. So flanking either side of the Pietà is Louis XIII and Louis XIV. On the right, you, as you're looking at it, you see Louis XIII, he's on his knee offering the Virgin his scepter and the crown. And on the left is Louis XIV. He was kneeling and he's basically completing the vow. These were all done by the Cousteau family, Guillaume and Nicolas, and then his uncle Antoine Coissevo. They are surrounded by angels holding instruments of the Passion. And it was finally finished under Louis XV in 1723. So it took three kings for this to finally get done.
That's, yeah, wow. Where do you find all this information? There's so much going on.
Well, this is, you know, this is why I was kind of became obsessed with, I mean, you know me, after 200 episodes, I'm obsessed with about 4,000 things. But normally this area of the church is closed off and it's only used for worshipers. So it's a place that people could go in the back and pray. And so I, when I go into churches and especially if I'm doing research and I want to see things, I always try to be very respectful. I don't like to take pictures where people are praying or, you know, because that's their own personal private time. So I would go into Notre Dame and I'd always kind of peek in the door and I, you know, there would be nobody in there and I would try to slide in there into this back part just to see the statues. And you could kind of see them through like the gate. But then somebody would come along and yell at me and tell me I can't go in there. So many times one of my trips, I stayed not very far from there, like a 10-minute walk. And so they would open every day at 7:30 and I would get there every day at 7:30 in the morning. As the doors open, because then I could just be in there like literally by myself with the few people that were cleaning it. And it was just amazing. So I had the whole place to myself and all the time I would try to go in there and somebody would always tell me, or I would just be too nervous to go in there. I didn't want to get in trouble. So one morning I got a little bit closer and this sweetest man that was always there in the morning cleaning saw me and I kind of poked my head in and then I walked away and he comes over and he's like, "Madame." And he just, with his finger, he's like, "Come here." And he took me in there. And then he said, he's like, "Cinque minutes." So he's like, "You have 5 minutes." And so I went in there. Nobody else was there. Nobody else was in the church. And I went back there and I got to stand in there and I took all the pictures that I wanted. And it was amazing. But he had said to me that he watched me every morning coming in there, taking my time and making notes, that he said nobody ever does that. And so he said that if anybody deserved to go in there to see it, it was me. And it was still to this day a moment I will never forget.
That's so sweet that he noticed you.
Yeah, it was very sweet. And so it was, you know, now every time I see it, so it was a very famous picture that came out the next day. And you see it, you know, you see the Pietà, you see the gold cross, and then you see Louis the 13th and 14th on either side. And it's very symbolic of here the church was, you know, almost destroyed. And here this is coming, you know, basically out of the burnt embers of it. But it was pretty amazing. And so I actually, the TF1 channel here in France, I think almost weekly or every couple weeks, they do a special program and there's going to be one on soon. And it actually, the reporters inside in front of those and interviewing them, I just saw like a second glimpse of it, you know, when they're promoting the show. So I'll definitely have to check it out. But all of that stuff is like clean, like white, clean, like back to it, what, how it was when all these things are created. And it's going to be amazing. Every once in a while I see pictures of what it looks like inside or videos. And it's just, I don't think anybody's going to recognize it because it's going to be so clean after so many years, decades of smoke and soot from candles and just dirt. And, you know, I mean, it's a massive church. It's not like somebody's there every day, you know, dusting the walls.
Yeah, it's going to be really special. I'm sure everyone's excited to get back and see it. I mean, so many people never got to see it the first time, and now it'll be even more special.
Yeah, and it's exactly 7 months from today. It is going to reopen.
Well, guys, make sure you head over to ClaudineHemingway.com to learn more and hire Claudine for a tour and tune in next week.
Thanks for listening today, guys. If you're interested in learning more about Claudine, her tours, history, and the beautiful photographs that she posts all over Instagram, tune into her website, claudinehemingway.com.